We'll hang tight.
Okay, you're ready, Commissioner.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Hang for administrative hold. What do you call that, Randy, down the Senate?
Recess,
oh yeah.
But we have to come to order first.
All right. I can't recess beforehand.
At ease.
There you go.
So, Mike, is the form all over the whole mayor thing over in Fargo right now? Three commissioners want to run, and then they'd have to step down to run, and then there'd be nobody left to run the city. Talk about a quagmire, huh? I don't know what's going to happen. And then if they change the rules to so they can all stay in office, that'd probably be some public outcry there, too.
You're unmuted. You're ready to roll.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalka meeting for our regular scheduled commission meeting. It is Wednesday, December 17th, approximately 10 a.m. And let's see. I have a couple opening comments. I'll hold up until we get into actually some of the motions. Just thank everyone for coming today. I'll turn over to Commissioner Christman.
No opening comments. Ready to get started.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchak.
I guess we can just get to work.
Get to work, right? All right, we have numerous items on consent. I'd move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
The only thing that I would just add in the discussion, the consent, is there's just a couple things I wanted to highlight that are on my consent. BK1 is a Met Tower relocation. The Fish and Wildlife Service requested to move that Met Tower, so the company put that in and we issued it. And for the BK3, same kind of thing. It was the 230 kV line. During the final construction phase, DOT had a road up there in the Williston area they wanted to expand, so they asked Basin to move one of the structures. So they're minor changes that were asked for by different agencies, so the company filed it with us, and we were happy to comply.
Is there any further discussion?
I would just add that the landowners agreed, at least on that Met Tower.
Yeah,
I think the other one was requested by the business. So,
right. Great point, Julie.
Further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, item BK1. I move that Commissioner Fedorchak serve as Chairman of the Public Service Commission for the next 2 years, effective January 1st, 2015.
Second.
I guess that's why I held my opening comments, because I wanted to opine a little bit here.
Oh.
I just want to thank actually all the members out there, Dave and Mike and Nick, for the time that you've spent covering the commission. That I've been the chair the last 30-some months. It's been a good run. I've had a lot of fun doing it. I think it's been an honor to be the chair for the last couple of years. So when you first get here, you kind of get your feet underneath you, and then the opportunity comes, you follow through on it. And it was an interesting time because Commissioner Kramer had just been elected to Congress. Commissioner Fetch had just been appointed to finish out the 6 months till we waited till Commissioner Christmas could win his race. And so it was a good time to work through. We had a lot of transition. And then in January, when my colleagues joined, it's very exciting. A lot of good things happened. And I look back to the time. The only thing I'll say is the most challenging thing that I think that I've had to part to work through is not working with different commissioners. I think we've always had very, very professional folks sitting in these chairs. It's dealing with the transmission lines. I was thinking back about that this morning, that the hearings that jump out over the last 30-some months are the Senator to Grand Forks hearings, the CapEx lines in Fargo, and certainly the AVS to NESA lines. And when I think about what I hope to get done the next 6 years, a lot of the reliability of the power grid is floating to the top very quickly. We're still going to stay focused on pipeline safety, but that's one of the things that I have looking forward to that I'm really just hoping to spend, I'm going to be spending a lot more time on. So enough about that. Commissioner Fedorchak, good luck. I'm excited for you. It's a good opportunity. The first thing starts off, we've already got you're really taking the lead on the testimony we have January 14th, I think it is. So good luck, and I look forward to supporting Commissioner Fedorchak and anything we need to do. So that's my comments.
Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, when you get involved in an organization, it seems like, at least to me, typically the president or chairman or leader of the organization almost seems irreplaceable. and
such as
because you learn under them, and I almost feel that way at this moment because you have been a good leader for us, especially in this time. I don't know if any commission chairman in at least modern history, going back to 1940 and the 2-year terms, maybe it happened, but I don't know if anyone in modern history has chaired during the time when two new commissioners showed up and had to learn the traditions and such of the commission. And I think you've done an extraordinary job, and I also think the Commissioner Fedorchak will do an extraordinary job leading us for the next 2 years. And so I'm, as much as I have enjoyed the past 2 years, I'm looking forward to the next 2 years.
Well, thank you both, Brian. I also want to say thanks for your good leadership the last couple of years and really helping get us young'uns, bringing us up to speed and keeping things running smoothly around here. I'm excited to serve as chair. I think that it's a job that has a few different responsibilities than all of us, but the reality is everyone has a big load here, and so that doesn't change. You each have your portfolios that you'll be providing leadership on in your way, and it's really kind of a team effort at the commission along with the staff. And so I think one of the biggest challenges moving ahead for the commission as a whole is preparing the agency for the changing workload and the changing demands in North Dakota, some of the new regulatory challenges that we face as a state. And I'm excited to work on those. And then also just preparing the agency. We've got a lot, like many organizations in North Dakota, the PSC is similar in that we have a lot of staff who've been here for many years. We have a lot of wisdom and experience on our staff, and we're fully aware of the fact that a lot of that wisdom and experience could choose to retire in the near future. And so we're working hard to prepare the PSC to be ready for that day, to transfer that knowledge to the younger generation, and organize in a way that will provide us seamless services to the citizens when that happens. So thank you for your kind remarks, and I look forward to a good couple of years ahead.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. All righty, item BK2. I move the commission portfolios be allocated as follows, effective January 1st, 2015. Commissioner Fedorchak is the incoming chair. We'll take the business operations portfolio, pipeline siting, railroads, and consumer affairs. So really the only change there is that Commissioner will be adding the business operations portfolio, and you'll see later on in my portfolio, I'll be returning back to me the gas and electric distribution. So for Commissioner Crisman, Commissioner Crisman will have the coal mining, reclamation, and abandoned mine lands, licensing, grain and auctioneers, and weights and measures. And for myself, gas and electric distribution, electric generation and transmission, telecom, and pipeline safety.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion?
Just like I pointed out, the only real change is Julie and I are just switching business ops and gas and electric distribution. It makes sense that business ops goes with the chair and gas and electric distribution. I had that before, so I'm looking forward to getting it back. And for MDU and Otter Tail and Excel, we're back.
Excuse me, we do not have a second yet.
Oh, second. Second.
My mistake, so sorry about that.
I'm happy to second that one. I have really enjoyed the gas and electric distribution. It has been a wonderful mechanism for me to really get to know the nuts and the bolts of the PSC. And so I was a little reluctant to let that one go, but I think it's great to hand it back to you, Brian, because you've got experience. I know some of the staff are excited to have you instead of me. I heard that this morning. So I think that but the reality is, again, we all work on the same things.
I wouldn't read it the same role. Way as you do, though.
So anyway, I think there's a lot of work to be done in some of the areas that remain in my portfolio, and I think this is a good distribution of workload, and I'm pleased that you were willing to take that on.
And the reason just why we're doing this meeting is that way effective January 1st is when all this takes place, then staff can spend the next couple of weeks getting all the paperwork set up, all the things that need to be signed and changed. So our first meeting in January, Commissioner Fedorchak will chair, all the paperwork's in place. In the past, we kind of did it the same meeting, and it was always kind of cumbersome because we're trying to get all the paperwork figured out and do all those things. So I think this is a good new tradition we're starting and doing it a couple weeks early.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, we'll keep moving on. If my colleagues don't mind, what I'd like to do is kind of lump together the discussion on BK3, BK4, and BK7. They're all dealing with damage prevention enforcement actions. So what I'd like to do is go through BK3 and 4 and then go to BK7, if that's okay with Randy and Julie. Okay, I'll go to item BK3. I move the Commission issue a Notice of Rescheduled Consolidated Hearing in Public Service Commission Northern Excavating, Inc. Damage Prevention Cases, and it's the seven cases that are listed in the announcement. So that would be the motion.
Second.
I guess a little background on this. This is a case that was scheduled for hearing, and back in October 29th, the PSC advocacy staff filed the formal complaints. In November of 2014, we found that it deemed a prima facie. In December 3rd, the commission granted the request of the respondent to continue the hearing. Basically, we had this set for hearing last week, and the company requested an extension or continuation, so we knew we had these other cases coming dealing with them, so we granted that. And now what we've done today by continuing this, a public hearing in this matter has been continued to February 3rd at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time in the commission hearing room. And you'll see in the next two motions, we'll start in the morning with this block of seven cases. At 1 o'clock, we'll deal with the next four it is, and then at 3 o'clock, we deal with the next three. But just to refresh the those listening out there, this block of cases is all dealing with alleged violations that Northern Excavating had seven different violations of North Dakota. One called damaging fiber optic drops, fiber optic cables, copper cables, related infrastructure. So the area, the damages was all in the area of the city of Ross, all to reservation telephone companies and infrastructure. And so seven different violations that have been proposed by staff. The total amount of fines that will be in front of us for these cases is $17,000 broken up amongst the seven different cases, ranging from $1,000 to be the smallest proposed fine for the staff up to $4,000. So that's kind of the setup. This has been around the commission for a while. What this does today is just continue it till February 3rd at 9 o'clock. And I look forward to a full hearing on this. And I think the staff certainly has everything in order on this.
We do need a second on that motion.
Second.
We're used to you being down here, Darrell.
It's kind of odd for me to be here. All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Okay, item BK4. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate for hearing under North Dakota Administration Code Section 6902.0404 and issue a Notice of Consolidated Hearing in Public Service Commission Northern Excavating, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement with the four cases that are listed in the announcement.
Second.
Now we got the motion and second, right, Darrell?
Yes.
All right, perfect. In these particular four cases, what staff has done, and I agree with it, they've broken out this next batch of seven into two blocks. These four are for alleged violations of careful and prudent of digging. And so you'll see that the next block that we have, it deals with no one-call tickets. So all four of these, if I could just quickly summarize, the first one, GS13886, is for damages in the Ross area, again, where Northern Excavating has been alleged that they've damaged MDU facilities. The proposed fine by staff on that one is $5,500. The next one, PU14134, a little bit earlier time frame. Most of these were in the October, September-October time frame. This one's actually dating back to March, but it's the same kind of setup. Northern Excavating in the city of Ross damaged reservation telephones infrastructure. And that fine there proposed by staff is $5,500. So you can see these fines that staff are proposing continue to escalate, which that's the way that the system is designed to do. And the third one, in this case, GS-14229, also the City of Ross, dealing with a natural gas strike of MDU's facilities alleged by Northern Excavating. This fine, $6,500. And finally, the third one, PU-14-671. This one occurred in the City of Bismarck, dealing with, it's a damage of MDU facilities. It's a three-phase electrical cable that was hit down the Apple Creek area. And that one, the proposed fine by advocacy staff is $7,500. So these four fines that are proposed are $25,000. I kind of walk through. In this particular case, the hearing is set, public hearing is set for February 3rd at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. So we'll have the hearing in the morning for those first seven cases, starting at 1 o'clock for these four cases. And these four cases are dealing with, improper digging is what it comes down to, violations of careful and prudent. So that's the way staff lumped them together. Like I said, I certainly agree with that. And just to reiterate, this is what the advocacy staff has recommended for fines. So the commission certainly has the range to go all the way from zero to actually $25,000 for each individual violation. So this is what the staff has recommended. And as we go through the hearing, there'll be, I'm sure, discussion back and forth. And then when we get to the final work session on this, we'll determine what we think is appropriate on that. I want to get that out there clearly. This is what staff is recommending, that we have the range to go up or certainly go back down.
We do have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, I'm jumping to BK-7 just because it is somewhat related. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the commission consolidate for hearing under North Dakota Administration Code Section 6902.0404 and issue a notice of consolidated hearing in Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement in the three cases that are listed in the announcement.
Second.
Okay, in these particular cases, I'll go through them again. Go through them for the first time. These three are all dealing with no one-call ticket. So the first four, careful and prudent, is the issue that we'll look at. These three are dealing with no one-call ticket. The time frame here, once again, is that September-October time frame of 2014. The three incidents that took place is MDU's facilities were damaged in the area of Ross for the first case, GS-13-884. Staff recommended fine there of $5,000. The second one is also a damage to MDU facilities in the City of Ross. Staff recommendation there, $5,500. And the third one is also MDU gas in the City of Ross. This recommended fine by staff for case GS-14-2300 is $7,500. So the similar type setup, the public hearing for this matters will be held commencing February 3rd at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. So the morning will cover the block of 7, 1 o'clock the careful and prudent, and then 3 o'clock we'll deal with these alleged violations that have no one-call ticket. To kind of summarize, the total of all fines in all three of these cases that staff proposed is $60,000. So this is by far the largest we've ever seen in the commission that's come in front of us, so it's unprecedented. What's also unprecedented is having to have a hearing of this magnitude. But that's the process, and I think that the staff has done a very good job setting this up, as well as legal on both sides, advocacy staff and advisory staff, that we've set this up to have very good, thorough hearings, have the company come in and say their piece, and then we'll make a decision. But I just want to commend everyone involved that, you know, I talked in my early comments about the importance of the power grid. We've been pushing pipeline safety and underground safety for 6 years now. And we've continued, I think, to increase the awareness, and we've yet to have a case like this in front of us. But tell you what, the situation is such that I think it's warranted to have this discussion. And it just shows that the industry has continued to improve what they're doing out there, but their tolerance for people that have strikes is really down to almost zero. And so there's nothing decided here, but we'll certainly have a lot of very good discussion about these 14 different cases.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Go from a light subject to an extremely serious subject, correct? Okay, let's go to item BK5. getting back on the agenda order. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning Cameroon Foss Concrete Construction, case number GS14-726.
Second.
In this particular case, Cameroon Foss Concrete Construction is a Minnesota corporation with its main office in Moorhead, Minnesota. NSP is a Minnesota corporation with its principal offices in downtown Nicollet Mall, Minneapolis, Minnesota. In September of this year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Excel alleging that a violation by Cameroon of North Dakota Century Code, they failed to follow North Dakota one-call. Our advocacy staff conducted a thorough investigation, including discussion with the Cameroon, Excel, and North Dakota One Call. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that on July 21, 2014, Cameroon began an excavation as defined under North Dakota law while installing a driveway at a house while under construction in South Fargo. Cameroon did not call in a locate ticket for this excavation. The damages were approximately $450. Based on the investigation, staff concluded there was no agreement between Cameroon and Excel. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that the excavation was not made in time of emergency. And based on the investigation, staff concluded that Cameroon violated North Dakota Century Code, a one-call law. Cameroon and the commission have agreed to resolve this matter via this consent decree. Cameroon has agreed to pay the fine that was recommended by advocacy staff of $1,500. They've also agreed to pay the damages to Excel Energy. So in this particular case, staff worked with the company and both companies, I guess, and was able to work out this consent decree. It looks to me the evidence was pretty clear that they didn't do the one call. Fortunately, in this case, and I should highlight in all the other cases, the previous 14, no one was injured and no one was killed. So that's why while those fines in the previous cases that are recommended by staff are large, they're not as large as they could have been if there was a fatality involved or injury. In this particular case, too, no one was harmed other than the infrastructure, which, of course, could have turned into a much bigger deal.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. Item BK6. I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing a certificate of site compatibility number 41 in Antelope Hills Wind Project LLC Wind Energy Conversion Facility, Mercer County Siting Application, case number PU14-679.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. Okay, in August of this year, Antelope Hills Wind Project filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for a wind energy conversion facility located in Mercer County, North Dakota. And Commissioner Crispin, is Mercer County part of District 33?
Very important part.
Just curious on that. All right. In September 17th of this year, the commission deemed the application complete and issued a notice of filing a notice of hearing and scheduled a public hearing for October 23rd, 9 o'clock in the Council Chambers, North Central Avenue in Beulah, North Dakota. On October 6th, the North Dakota Department of Health filed comments with respect to this project. And on October 23rd, a public hearing was held as scheduled. And on November 23rd, Antelope Hills late filed exhibits. That hearing went, I think, pretty smooth. There was a few questions that we asked, and that's what the late filed exhibits came from. In December of this year, just this week, Antelope Hills filed a copy of their SHPO concurrence on this project, saying that that it was acceptable dealing with all the cultural concerns that may have been around it. So that was a very good filing at a very appropriate time. A little background, Antelope Hills Wind Project is a Delaware limited liability company headquartered in Santa Barbara. Antelope Hills proposes to construct a wind energy facility in Mercer County, northwest of the town of Beulah, north of the towns of Zapp and Golden Valley. The revised project area consists of 22,000 acres. The project will consist of up to 86 wind turbines, which will be placed throughout the project area. And the estimated project cost is $240 million, so roughly a max of 86 turbines, cost of $240 million. Mercer County has issued a conditional use permit for this project. One thing that was a little bit different about this project is I applaud the company for doing so. They came in and they testified of a range of turbines that they might be using. We found ourselves where companies will come in and say, we're going to use turbine X. And when it comes time to purchase the turbines, they come up with a different version, and we have to go back and potentially amend the order and maybe even have a different hearing. Actually, our hearing Monday is for that out in the Ashley area. But in this particular case, the company came in and testified that they were using one of three different turbines, a Siemens 2.3108, Avestis V100, or Avestis V110. And that's where the order states that they can pick up to 86 different turbine locations. And so depending which final turbine mix they use, you may have a difference in numbers, but it will never exceed more than 86. In our discussion on noise and shadow flickered, we considered the worst-case scenario for all these turbines. So I think it was a very good way for the company to set up the hearing so we don't find ourselves going back and doing different hearings as they do turbine changes. And quite honestly, on this, Commissioner Crisman brought up a very good point yesterday at a work session on a different case where, you know, we don't have power companies coming in telling us they're going to select their transformer at the last possible minute. So it's a different, what's how these two industries are kind of changing a little bit, where the wind companies are not having the certainty of whether the turbine that they're able to have till the very end. It's putting the commission in some interesting positions. So we're actually going to have a work session on that probably into January. But for this particular case, they covered all three different turbines, so I certainly hope they select one of them. But there's a backstory there somewhere about how the wind companies are having a challenge finding exactly what turbine they're going to have till the very end of the project. No matter what turbine they use, the range that it'll operate in, winds approximately more than 7 miles per hour. And depending which one they use, they'll cut off for the Siemens V100 and V110 at 44, and for the 108, it can go up to 56 miles per hour. The lighting will be installed as required by the FAA on all towers. There's an associated transmission line that's a separate case in front of this, in front of the commission, that will be used to transport the power to Basin Electric's Antelope Valley Station. So Basin will certainly be purchasing this power, but that case is in front of us. We're still working on the 10-mile power line. All easements are in place for this project. Each turbine will be equipped with the SCADA system, which is Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. Always an interesting twist when we're working in the area of District 33 and good lignite coal country. There are potentially mineable coal reserves in the project area. So Antelope Hills consulted with representatives of Coteau Properties and requested that turbines not be placed between Basin Electric's Antelope Valley Station and 4 miles to the west of the station in order to avoid future mining operations forecasted through the year 2045. So we really appreciate the wind companies working with the coal groups to make sure they don't put these turbines right on top of mineable coal reserves, which could put us in an interesting scenario down the road. So appreciate the company's willingness to do that. I appreciate Coteau Properties reaching out to them and getting this set up so we could put it in the order today. Antelope Hills has consulted with North Dakota Game and Fish, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. No federally endangered threatened candidate species were recorded. Noise and shadow flickered were modeled for the worst-case scenario of the turbines and all fell within appropriate parameters. The closest turbine for a participating landowner is 1,336 feet. The closest turbine for a non-participating resident is 1,806 feet. The company will use North Dakota One Call system. We put in our order that Antelope Hills has a legal obligation to decommission the wind farm. And I believe that covers everything. So site certificate number 41 will be issued for up to 86 turbines, a totaling of 172 megawatts. And they need to file with us the final turbine location and model before they begin construction. So a little bit long, but I think everything appears to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I think, you know, one of the points that you made, but I just want to add to it a little bit, regarded the mineable coal reserves that are in that area, and they seem to have worked with the mining company that's close by, and didn't have any turbines in the map placed on what the geological survey shows us is the mineable coal. But they still, when they came to us with the application, had a significant portion of the mineable coal reserves in their area that they were asking to be approved. And as we've seen with the other project that you mentioned that we were working on yesterday, it seems like we approved these, and then they kind of want to grow their area later. So as part of our hearing and the discussion, the company was very cooperative and has pulled those areas off of the map now that we're approving. And the significant mineable coal reserves are not in this area. I guess the one thing that concerns me with this, and it's just not our area of dealing with in this case, is the fact that clearly this is power that's going to end up with Basin Electric and is a significant part of the solution, I guess, to our obvious need for more power in the coming decade or so up in the northwest corner of the state. You know, we can see that based on the transmission line plans that they have. And it does concern me as we continue to grow the amount of wind power that's making up our generation system, exactly what's going to happen in the future when we get some real calm days, when it's extraordinarily hot or extraordinarily cold. But that's not our position of authority over, especially the cooperatives in this case. So I guess we need to rely on their planning and also recognize the fact that they are pretty much hamstrung as far as doing much other than wind by the EPA. So it's probably the best solution possible at this point for them, but it does certainly concern me.
Did you have anything? I do. A couple thoughts. First of all, it's interesting to be approving this today when the Senate just passed a one-year extension of the PTC last night. And so we're seeing a lot of, you know, wind development still in North Dakota, despite the fact that the PTC was scheduled the last one expired a year ago, and then companies found lots of ways to come in under that requirement and still develop and still qualify. And now it's been extended another year, so they'll be able to do some additional work in the next couple of weeks to make sure that they qualify by the end of this year, because I think it's just through 2014 that the extension lasts. So they'll have to be making investments or doing some construction, you know, before the deadline, which I think is the end of this year for that extension. So it will extend out the development of wind in North Dakota another year, and maybe beyond that, the industry will be able to exist without any of the PTC credits. We'll see. But we're seeing a lot of wind development in North Dakota. We've got, I looked at our statistics, we've got just over 1,600 megawatts of wind existing today that's in production. And we have another 1,200 or more that has been approved and is progressing. We have, you know, so those are active projects, 1,200 or more, that we will probably see come online within the next couple of years, and that includes the project that we're approving today. So that brings the total in North Dakota to 2,880 in the next couple of years. And then there's about 500 or so megawatts that we've approved, but they're kind of on hold, so we're not really sure if they're going to be developed or not. You're seeing the average price of wind dropping considerably. We're hearing that from MDU. We're hearing that from Xcel Energy, Otter Tail Power, Basin. All of them are saying the price of wind is coming down. Obviously, that's to a large degree because of the production tax credit. But we're also seeing that the costs of the turbines are coming down and the technology is better. So the industry is advancing and developing. I think it's an important part of the all of the above energy strategy. We have to make sure we have the good, reliable, traditional generation to back wind up. But when the wind is blowing and you're able to mix in the wind energy in there, it does result in lower emissions, and it can be a very affordable solution. So I think it's an important part of the mix, and North Dakota is a leader in providing this wind generation to our state, our region, and our country. It's a subject that comes up a lot when you're talking to citizens in the state, and I have been amazed and kind of impressed with the fact that all of these projects come to us with a fair amount of local support. In fact, we've never, since I've been on here, approved a project that didn't have support of the county that it was in. And so when I get asked about wind generation and what's happening in North Dakota, what I see, I always tell that to people. Yeah, there's a lot of it, and it's a huge footprint. And there's mixed reaction to whether people like the wind towers or don't like the wind towers. But when we're in the communities that are going to be living and working amongst these, there's usually a large degree of support for them. And so I think that's bottom line. It comes kind of down to the people living and working amongst them. And if they're supportive, I think that goes a long way to continue to support the development of this industry. So I think that's all the comments I had on wind today.
Thank you, Julie.
Windy comments on wind.
Julie brought up the fact that the counties have a very important role, and I would agree with that 100%, that I've never voted on something that a county didn't approve, and I can't imagine doing it. If the county hasn't issued their conditional use permit, that's a big red flag to me. So that I still maintain the counties have the most control in these wind farms, because they, if a county has a setback that's more restrictive than the commission's guideline, we follow it. If the county doesn't issue the conditional use permit, it would be very hard for us to see a way, path forward on that. Took back to Commissioner Christman's comments about the reliability, though, that's where in my opening comments I talked about concerns, and that is the concern I do have, not just for North Dakota, is the whole country, the reliability of the power grid. Because everybody's building their wind, and then everybody's building, you know, the natural gas peakers, but nobody's fighting for that base load, whether it's coal or whether it's natural gas. And so I talked the last commission meeting, I was headed out to talk with our senators and some other coal folks, and you know, there's a lot of folks working in North Dakota, and I'm part of some groups too that are trying to get that next generation of coal plant built in North Dakota, where we burn North Dakota lignite, we capture the CO2 for oil recovery and different kind of things, you know. So I'm very optimistic that in the next 5-6 years we could get another coal plant built in North Dakota. I wouldn't have said that 3-4 years ago, but I am optimistic that as the technologies come online, that we could build that next generation 100 to 200 megawatt plant in the state, work out some dealing with the oil companies to take the CO2, especially as the cost of oil per barrel goes down. It's just, these are the things that we've got to keep leveraging. I know the Lignite Council is working on it very hard. There's some things that they're working through the governor's office for this session, but I think it'll take the commission's constant pressure on our investor-owned utilities as well to make sure they keep that full mix of generation. And you know, we talk a lot about coal in North Dakota, not as much about nuclear, but Xcel Energy has a very large amount of their power generated from nuclear power, and we benefit from that in North Dakota. So we do have to keep an eye on the nuclear policies in the state, in the country as well. So that's where it's fighting the local battles here in the state, but also be aware of what's going on around us that we really got to keep an eye on. So anyway, that's my thoughts. Randy, anything else, Julie?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, item BK8. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning Plot Construction ND LLC case number GS14-217.
Second.
Plot Construction is an Illinois corporation with offices located in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. MDU is a North Dakota corporation with offices located here in Bismarck. On April 14th of this year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from MDU alleging a violation by Plot of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 4923 of the one-call evacuation notice system. Our CRAC commission advocacy staff conducted an investigation, including communication with Plot, MDU, and North Dakota one-call. And I have to throw that out there, too, that the last session we fought hard for two additional positions in public utilities that resulted in Victor being on staff and Julie Prescott. And I'll tell you that without those two on staff right now, it would be very challenging to keep up with all the things going on in public utilities. And so there was folks that pushed back on those downstairs, and I'm very glad we got those taken care of. And as we get into this next session, we're going to make sure they know that for us to keep doing our job, we need people to do it. So that's why you see all these cases kind of coming to head right now, because we do have the staff over there to do the work in a lot of these cases. So, sidebar, but staff conducted the thorough review of this, and staff concluded based on their investigation that on November 22nd, Plot was doing an excavation near 46th Street in Williston, North Dakota. The North Dakota One Call Center did assign a locate ticket to the evacuation system, but also based on staff concluded that Plot began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code while performing an excavation for building footings. So they're working on a building. Based investigation, staff concluded that a 2-inch loop, 2-inch fed polyethylene medium pressure gas line was damaged during the excavation, and that the damage was approximately $444. MDU has been reimbursed. No customers lost services. Based on staff investigation, they concluded that Plot violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice in the North Dakota one-call system at least 48 hours before it began its excavation. So, once again, it's a timing issue, and we still have to work with that, with the education. In a couple of these last cases, you see it's companies operating outside of North Dakota. But I always go back to the basis that every state has a one-call law. So I just don't have a lot of tolerance for companies that say they didn't know. There's not a state out there that doesn't have a law to call 811. Now, the parameters might be different. It might be 21 days for a locator, 30 days, but every state has this law in the books. So I think this consent order is very much in order, and the commission has ordered Plot to pay a fine of $1,500, in which they've agreed to do in this consent order. And so just thank staff once again for putting this together.
We do have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
I move the commission closeout contract number 679-13 with Pleasant & Sons Construction Incorporated for completion of work that involved sinkhole filling and other maintenance work at abandoned coal mines in western North Dakota.
Second.
On June 9th of 2013, the commission awarded this contract to Pleasant & Sons Construction of Greenville, Kentucky, to fill dangerous sinkholes caused by the collapse of underground mine workings. Contract that was awarded last year was considered a two-year project to fill sinkholes in 2013 and 2014. The ending date of the contract is December 31st of this year. Sinkhole filling work was conducted at sites near Beulah, Bowman, Dickinson, Garrison, Hanks, Haynes, Garrison, New Salem, Noonan, Richardson, Scranton, Washburn, Williston, Wilton, and Zapp. All work has now been satisfactorily completed, and the AML division recommends the contract be closed. Work began on August 5th of 2013 and was completed on just November 14th, a month ago. During the project, 381 dangerous sinkholes were filled. That included several near Bowman and Dickinson that were considered emergencies. Stabilization of erosion features was also conducted at the Beekler, Velva, and Richardson AML sites. Earlier this year, a contract amendment approved by the commission and five change orders were issued that increased the original contract price from $100,000 to $236,250. And to work that down a little further, in 2013, the commission increased that by $50,000 of that amount because of just multiple sinkholes that we were aware of. And the fact that the contractor was able to do them and was doing them at a good price. And then in April of this year, we increased it by $75,000. And that was, again, because of multiple sinkholes. But the primary one in that case, I'm sure you'll remember, the large opening that developed near Dickinson right along a highway. And then the other changes were staff approved. The total amount paid to Pleasant & Sons under the contract is $233,721. Bill Dodd supervised this project, and the work was completed to his satisfaction. The contractor also certified that all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for fulfilling terms of the contractors have been paid, and the final invoice was submitted, and it has been paid. I would just point out in that list of communities, certainly we're all familiar with some of these places like Dickinson and Williston and Zapp, but Haynes and Hanks I thought maybe would draw a little more attention. And so I'll tell you that Hanks is 6 miles northwest of Zoll. And if that doesn't help, it's 7 miles east of Granora up in that northeast corner of the state. And Haynes is 16 miles southeast of Hedinger. And if anyone goes...
That's South Dakota.
Very near it. If anyone doesn't recognize the name Haynes and they're among their older listeners or viewers, they may remember it. It was originally called Gadsden, but the name was changed in 1907 to recognize George B. Haynes, the president of the Milwaukee Railroad.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none.
I do have one thing I'd like to mention. And that is, I heard a very fascinating story on North Dakota Public Radio this morning about the use of fly ash, the PSC's use of fly ash in the recovering of abandoned mines. And here we have an example of a lot of communities or a lot of sinkholes that were probably filled with that fly ash material. And I would join in Bill Dodd's comments about the importance of that product and the value. Then I really hope the EPA doesn't make it illegal for folks like our abandoned mine division to use that product, which is working very well and is a really effective a way to put a discard waste product to use in North Dakota. So
it's a very good point you bring up. 16% of all of the material that we inject is that fly ash, and since it's part of a federal program, really our dollar amount is the limiting factor. And so if we in the future are not allowed to use that fly ash, what it'll mean is we'll be less effective at doing this, and because the cost will go up, like I say, our dollar amount is set, it will mean less of these sinkholes that get filled and prevent future problems. So it would be a terrible shame if we were not allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we're on the fly ash topic, it's not just using the fly ash because it mixes with the concrete. It actually makes the concrete better. It makes it more manageable early to push it into the crevices you need to, but as it hardens up, it has much better capacity of just holding that strength for much longer. So it's using a resource wisely. It's making the concrete better. And they go back when that bridge fell in Minneapolis. That was a bridge that was supposed to have a component of fly ash in it, but they took it out. And so there's just a lot of things that are in place. So I think there's been a lot out there, but fly ash is a good thing, I guess, is the point.
Not to mention the amount that we use does not have to be landfilled. So certainly a win-win-win.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Completes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Randy, for the history lesson on your portfolio area. I'll go ahead with my first motion. I move the commission issue a billing surcharge of 0.2505 cents per kilowatt hour in Northern States Power Company's 2014-2015 transmission facility cost recovery rates, case number PU-14-644.
Second.
This is the first of three motions this morning, all dealing with transmission facility cost recovery riders, which is a long way of saying these are the charges to customers to pay for transmission costs that are not included in the base rates of their electric bill. All three of the investor-owned utilities have these transmission riders now. With the first one, this is the first year for NSP's transmission rider. This was approved in the settlement agreement last spring. And so now this is the first time that NSP customers will have these in North Dakota. The other two power companies have had them since 2012. So how they work is every year the companies estimate how much they're going to need to cover their transmission costs, and at the end of the year they come back and chew that up, what they actually spent, and project what they're going to need for the next year and adjust the rate accordingly. So we'll be doing that for all three of the companies this morning. It's interesting to think about. We passed the wind farm earlier today, and now we're talking about transmission cost recoveries, and you're seeing a lot of transmission development and therefore a lot of charges to customers for that. And there's a number of driving factors behind the growth in transmission and the need. Some of it is the development of these rural regional transmission organizations like MISO and being part of those. The idea there is to have, you know, more efficient marketplace and use the generation more wisely, but it does require some investments in transmission to keep the system working together as effectively as possible. The second is reliability. You'll see if you looked through the charges and what makes up the increases this time around, there's a significant new project approved by NERC, which is the National Electric Reliability Corporation. They have required all the utilities to go through a massive tree trimming project all over the country, and those costs are included in these transmission riders. There's new generation, increased demand in North Dakota. You have to build transmission to reach that those new generators. And then energy policy is a big driver of transmission costs as well. The wind projects that we've got in North Dakota coming up with 3,000 megawatts, all of those have to be connected to the grid, and you're seeing new transmission costs as a result of the bringing on of wind and other renewables, as well as new fossil fuel generation as well. So those are the big drivers of the increases in transmission costs, and you're going to be seeing those here now the next three motions. This one for NSP, like I said, it's their first transmission cost rider. It's they're estimating to recover $5.8 million in costs, transmission costs for North Dakota customers for 2014 and 2015. There's 25 different projects throughout the system that are not currently being recovered through base rates, and so those will be recovered through this rider. Those include six CapEx projects. Three-quarters of the costs on this rider are coming from the Fargo to Twin Cities CapEx project and the Brookings to Twin Cities CapEx projects. So those are covering of that covers accounts for a vast majority of the costs. And then there's some billings and credits from MISO and a variety of other projects throughout the region included in here. The cost will be an average of 25 cents per kilowatt hour, which equates to about $1.88 per month for the average residential customer. And these rates would take place January 1st.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, the second issue covers Otter Tail Power. I move the commission approve Otter Tail Power Company's 2014 transmission facility cost recovery rates case number PU-14-690.
Second.
For Otter Tail Power, they are estimating the transmission costs for 2015 to be $7.2 million. And on top of that, they're needing to recover $1.2 million of unrecovered costs from the current year for a total amount of $8.46 million that they'll be seeking to recover through this transmission rider in 2015. That amounts to about $2.06 per residential customer. And there's 14 projects included in this rider. This rider was initially approved in May of 2012, and every year the company comes before us and takes out old projects and puts in new projects and adjusts it accordingly. More than half of the projects, more than half of the $8.4 million is coming related to the CapEx project for Otter Tail, Fargo to Twin Cities, and then the Bemidji to Grand Rapids CapEx project. And so $2.06 per average residential customer increase.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And then the final one, I move the commission approve Montana-Dakota Utility Companies, a division of MDU Resource Group, Inc., 2014 Transmission Facility Cost Recovery Rates, case number PU-14-734.
Second.
MDU's transmission facility recovery rate was, or rider was approved in 2012. This year in the company estimates in 2015 that they'll have transmission expenses of $3.5 million. In 2014, they over-recovered approximately $1 million for a total amount to recover this upcoming year of $2.4 million. So customers will actually see, MDU customers will actually see a decrease in their rider amount of 60 cents per month effective January 1st. And most of MDU's charges are from WAPA, pass-through charges from WAPA, and then the net between the income that they make from MISO versus the charges from MISO, and those really constitute a bulk of the rider costs for MDU.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, if I could, Daryl and Julie, just throw some perspective on this. The riders are a good idea. And the reason I say that is because they allow the commission to go in annually and look at what the amount of recovered is. In this case, as Julie brought out, MDU, the amount is being tweaked down a little bit. So if this had been something put in base rates, that probably wouldn't happen. And so it's very good for us to go in annually and look at these and adjust them as appropriately. But the frustration I have with the transmission planning is just that it goes back to my comments in the front end about getting more involved in these regional organizations and things going on outside the state. A lot of these costs that come to our investor owns are already set in stone, if you will, and then investor owns kind of just have to pay them. It's negotiations that take place at the OMS MISO board room. It's negotiations that take place in Southwest Power Pool and the regional stakeholders. So we have got to be more involved as a state. I know Jerry Lane has been very involved in it over the last few years. We brought in Charles, can you raise your hand in the back? David Charles is recently retired out of Basin Electric. We brought David in as what we're calling you, a term worker, a temp worker, if you will. Up until June of this year, we've got some money in payroll that we're going to have him come in and help us cover the waterfront and some of these transmission planning issues. And I'm going to be getting more involved. But that's the frustration I have. I think tariffs are a good idea, but a lot of times they set up the hierarchy of what's going where for cost outside of what comes into the state. Then the investor owns are giving something that here's the cost they owe someone. So we really go into this discussion and we end up kind of just approving it. It's not like a rate case where we have a lot of give and take that can place forward. It's kind of the way it sets up. So we've got to continue to be engaged in our transmission planning. As I talked about build out in the beginning, and when you build these transmission lines, there's a cost. It takes a while till it comes back through. But the biggest thing we need to keep an eye on in North Dakota is to make sure the cost allocation formulas are set up to be fair to North Dakota customers. And that's been a huge contention over the last few years. Actually, MDU and Otter Tail threatened to pull out of MISO here about 3-4 years ago because they were going to change the cost allocation formula on transmission projects. So going forward, we're going to keep heavily engaged in that. I just wanted to put that context out there because when customers see this, they're going to be surprised, I think, just because they don't quite understand how the tariffs work. But that's, I guess, they're worthwhile. We've got to stay engaged in how those costs come to North Dakota customers.
One more comment about Dave, since you mentioned him and he's new to the media here. With Basin's membership into SPP, we basically doubled the amount of RTO work that we have. And so it got to be a lot for Jerry to cover, who is our RTO expert. And so Dave's really going to help us cover that side of the work, at least while we get the kinks worked out in the next 6 months or year of that new membership and what it means to North Dakota and what it means to the commission and so that's really great to have his expertise. And he brings a lot of expertise from Basin and knowledge of that system. So glad to have him on board.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And just to add, we still are always under constant concern that Jerry Lean is called up to the Vikings. So... Jerry, if that happens, we've got at least a little backup for you.
Dreams do come true, Jerry.
If you've been to Jerry Lean's office, you should stick your head in there. It's a Viking shrine.
Okay, I move the commission deem complete the application of One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC for a site certificate and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC, Demicks Lake Gas Processing Plant, McKinsey County, citing application case number PU-14-764.
Second.
On October 23rd of 2014, One Oak Rockies Midstream filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for this 400 million standard cubic feet per day gas processing plant to be located on approximately 160 acres in McKenzie County. It's about 12 miles north and west of Watford City. The commission now finds this application complete, and we will be setting a time and a location for a hearing during the admin portion of our meeting. That hearing will be the public's opportunity to come forward and express any concerns or ideas or thoughts or support for this project. And so we'll be setting that time here later. Just a little bit more information on this project. It's 400 million cubic feet per day permitted unit, which will be the largest single location gas plant currently in North Dakota. It comes, it's basically in two sets, though, two cryogenic turbo expander processing units. I dare you to use that, Dave. Cryogenic turbo expander processing units, two basically processing trains. Each of them will be 200 million standard cubic feet per day. The One Oak will use their gas gathering system to feed those. The processed natural gas will be exported on Northern Border, and the NGLs will be processed out of, or transported out of state through One Oak's NGL line. They're going to develop the first train, first constructing as soon as they get their permit this winter. And then they will construct the second one when the volume commitments are reached to demand that. They hope to have this plant in service by the first quarter of 2016. And these projects cost, this project costs $321 million per train. So when complete, they estimate it'll be about a $642 million facility. And this One Oak has significant investments in North Dakota. They have the Grasslands plant, which is 100 million cubic feet, built in 1980, and then they've since 2011 brought on Garden Creek 1 and 2 and 3, State Line 1 and 2, and they came to us for a permit for Lonesome Creek, which is under construction, and they hope to bring that one on in the end of next year, I believe. And so they will have up to 1,300 million cubic feet per day capacity by the end of 2016 based on what they have already and their plans that we know of. So significant investments by One Oak. They are the largest gas processor in North Dakota, followed up by Hess and then Whiting. And playing a key role in the ability to take all that flare gas and put it to good use in North Dakota for North Dakotans and others throughout the country.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just add some perspective. I guess I whispered over to my colleague Commissioner Crispin. We had a previous hearing when we asked the question about how much power for a smaller plant, and they said 50 megawatts of electricity. So this plant will take at least 50 megawatts of electricity. So when you start figuring out how much electricity we need to push to the west, you know, this plant is going to be probably 60 megawatts of power it's going to take to run it. So somewhere right now, somebody's trying to figure out how to get 60 megawatts of power to this particular spot. So it goes back to our constant discussion about baseload power.
Mm-hmm. Also, another observation, though, is, you know, for a number of years now since the Bakken really exploded, there's been the concern and talk about the flaring.
Right.
And, you know, we got to do something about the flaring. Well, and you mentioned Whiting and Hess and One Oak. You know, some of these companies are putting extraordinary amounts of money into this, and this is exactly what it is doing is providing a place for that gas to go and be made use of and lessen the flaring that we do in the state. And so, you know, this one plant, by the time both units are built, close to two-thirds of $1 billion. So it's an extraordinary investment. But these are the kind of projects that are the answer to the flaring.
And that investment is just a fraction when you consider the pipelines needed to serve this project and take the product out, the finished product. So it is significant investment. I do want to make another plug, and I've appreciated the efforts that the media has made to make these public hearings known to the public, because we do hear and we do see people coming, and this is their chance to show up and express any interest, concerns, and also to learn more about the project, because the companies go into detail for their plans. So it's really, that's the whole point of us having the hearings, and we really like to see the public attend.
We've had people come to the hearing that aren't concerned about that project, but they're concerned about other projects, that we found that information useful as well. So, yeah, great point, Julian. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
My final motion is and more on the routine nature. I move the commission adopt the order reissuing certificate and permit in Basin Transload LLC / DeSoro High Plains transfer of corridor certificate and route permit citing application case number PU-13-872.
Second.
On September of 2013, the commission issued certificate of corridor compatibility number 145 and route permit number 157 to Basin Transload LLC for the construction, operation, and maintenance of a 10-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Mercer County. On November 6th of 2013, Basin and Tesoro filed a joint application to transfer the certificate of corridor compatibility and the route permit. On November 6th of 2014, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing that provided a deadline of December 12th for filing written comments or requests for hearing. No comments or requests for a hearing were filed. The notice stated that issues to be considered are whether Tesoro agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the corridor certificate and the route permit issued to Basin and whether the requested transfer is compatible with the public interest. With the application, Basin and Tesoro filed the affidavit of Greg Henderson, who is Assistant Vice President of Tesoro. The affidavit states that Tesoro agrees to assume the rights and obligations of the corridor certificate and route permit. Dated September 25th, 2013, the commission finds that Tesoro has agreed and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and it isn't compatible with public interest.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
More action in Mercer County, and yet our ag producers still find a way to provide food, fuel, and fiber.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay, I don't have any closing comments, Commissioner Crisman?
None.
Julie?
Nope.
Okay, are there any questions from the members of the media present today or anyone else for that matter?
Have you been in contact with Otter Tail regarding what happened at Coyote? And are you expecting to see something filed similar for cost recovery there?
Well, I speak for myself. I guess I have been in contact with them. As we got the press releases from them, the immediate notification, they were very good about letting us know what was going on. And I guess, yes, I do expect at some point in time they'll come back and ask for something like this, just like when we saw with the other events that have taken place for other investor owns. You may not see it until the rate case. So I don't know that they would come in separately, but I guess that's, I guess, my perspective. I don't know if they've talked to my colleagues at all.
At this point, as far as dollar amounts, though, you know, they haven't, I don't think they're anywhere near knowing really what the dollar amounts are going to be.
But it's interesting that you mentioned that at one point they were thinking about pulling out of the MISL system.
Oh, absolutely. That was the, I think it was Commissioner Clark had the portfolio then, but I remember having a discussion with Tony, and we had all the groups come in, and they were ready to leave. Because the exit costs would have been less than the cost of staying in if they changed the cost allocation formula. And it got to be a pretty heated discussion. And quite honestly, that thanks to a lot of good folks in North Dakota and South Dakota, we were able to hold that position. But what's happened inside of MISO now is they've entered in new states. They call it MISO South is now on board. So now our voice, which was small perhaps to start with, has become even smaller in the larger MISO world. And so that's one of the concerns I really have going forward in MISO when they start voting for things. You know, Jerry Leon has done a tremendous job. He's very well respected in that crowd, but it just comes down to is that people want costs to be better for them. Everybody wants that. And as they go back and forth, that the challenge is they need our generation. And so I think that's the key where we got to keep building our generation to meet our needs, but even to export it.
Dave, that question kind of points to the importance of planning reserves. And I thought, when I first heard about this, that's what came to mind initially for me was this is a 400-megawatt facility. And thank goodness we have, you know, extra facilities to fill the gap, and companies have to have that planning reserve so that they are able to continue keeping the lights on and the power grid reliable when you lose a big facility like that. It does also make me concerned about all the retirements we're hearing about, some of them premature, of baseload generation facilities that are occurring throughout the country required by the new environmental regulations. And it does put the reliability in jeopardy when we're putting facilities out of commission that can back up, you know, when you have accidents, which are bound to happen.
Well, the reason I asked the question about cost, because they did have to use MISO, and they had to buy power to make up the difference, so to speak, and I assume that's going to come before you.
Some of that might flow through the fuel cost adjustment. We've seen that before where it won't need to be a rate case, but there'll be a spike in customer bills. We saw that in Xcel a couple different times when they had that gas shortage. There was a spike, so we'll have to wait and see. Julie's point about the planning reserve, that's one of the things we're working through now. The Southwest Power Pool, which Basin Electric is soon to be a member of, has a different planning reserve margin than MISO does. And so they're not necessarily apples to apples. And now there's a bunch of things that MDU has that are expiring with WAPA and others about equations of who pays what to whom. So there's a whole big discussion going on in MDU right now that they've got a hearing coming up in front of FERC that I'm watching that really closely if we can weigh in on it. But this, the setting of these transmission tariffs and the cost to move power back and forth, it's no longer a static world. It's going to change. And it's hard to imagine that it'll be less cost than it is right now. But that's where we really got to stay heavily engaged in the fight. And I'm glad that Commissioner Clark is on the FERC right now, because the FERC has a lot of discretion on some of these areas, and some of these cases are coming in front of him, and I know he knows this area very well. And he's been there long enough now where he doesn't have to step aside like he had to the first couple of years.
Commissioner Fedorchik, could you just explain the math behind MDU's cost recovery rider again, the 60%,
sure,
60 cents per month decrease that their customers will see?
Yeah, they let me pull that one out here.
We have experts from MDU in the crowd as
yep.
well.
So they the projected 2015 transmission expenses are $3.5 million. In round figures, and it's offset by a projected over recovery in 2014 of a little more than $1 million. So it results in $2.4 million that needs to be covered through this rider in 2015. And in order to recover that amount, they're decreasing their current rider by 60 cents per month. And I don't know what the current I've got the rates, but I don't know what the current rider is average per customer. But we could find that out, what the average customer is paying today. I mean, I know it by, you know, the existing rate, but it's in kilowatt hours, which isn't very helpful.
For these other two, for NSP and Otter Tail, I mean, that $1.88, that $2.06, that's an increase over what they're seeing now.
That is an increase over their current rate, yes.
Right. And this will be a 60-cent decrease for MDU.
Correct. Yep.
Also, when does Antelope Hills expect to have this wind farm in service?
Let's go back and look. Mm-hmm. Jerry, do you remember off the top of your head? I thought I saw 2016.
Yeah, I believe they're hoping for a late 2015 in service date. They would start now, and then they would
Oh, I know what it was. It was takes approximately 9 to 12 months to construct. So I think Jerry's exactly right. If they can start, I think the big thing, the production tax credit is part of the reasons I think they really wanted to get this decision this year. So we've made our decision today, which they can probably go out and put some roads in there and apply for this year's PTC. But based on what they've told us in their filing, 9 to 12 months once they start construction, that would tie in almost perfectly to what Jerry just said, September, October, November time frame.
Were there some particular projects that were going on that Northern ended up having so many damage preventions? Were there some major projects going on during this time frame that led to them having repeated violations?
You know, Nick, I guess I don't know that. What I do know is just that the companies, MDU and Reservation Telephone, filed complaints. Our staff investigated. I think it's just the ongoing work up in that part of the state. So I guess I wouldn't know particularly what projects they were working on. They are a Jamestown company, so I'm sure you could give them a call and they'd give you their thoughts.
And when will we know the date for the 1-0 hearing?
In about 45 minutes.
Okay.
We can let you know if you want. Yep. Stacy can give you a shout.
We'll decide in 45 minutes. The hearing won't be in 45
minutes. I'm assuming we're ready to go with some possible dates. I actually haven't talked to – I don't see Julie.
Probably in February sometime, I would guess. Huh?
We got some potential dates.
Okay, good. Sorry, Daryl.
Okay, going once, going twice. Questions?
I was also just kind of curious regarding the turnover for chair of the commission. What kind of led to that?
Rich tradition.
Well, I mean, also, you've been
I've been campaigning for a long time.
Just curious why you'd switch it over with a relatively new commission. Just curious.
Well, I think that the way it's set up, the commission has a lot of good traditions, and this is one of them. It's very for the longest back as I guess I can remember, and anyone before me, that traditionally every 2 years you rotate the chair of the commission. And as was pointed out, the chair of the commission has more of the administrative roles. We all have our individual portfolios. But I'll tell you that from my personal viewpoint, I've really enjoyed being the chair the last couple of years, but you spend a lot more time doing a lot of the personnel issues and those things inside the commission, which is very important. But also when you are not the chair, then you can focus in on other areas that perhaps you didn't have the availability of time and resources to do that. So I think it's very good. And I think it also allows all three commissioners to get a sense of what the sitting in this chair is different than sitting in those chairs. I mean, I sat there for 4 years before sitting here, and it's just a different scenario. And I don't think Commissioner Chrisman, Commissioner Fedorchek, Commissioner Fetch or Clark or might be here, any one of us is, I think, after you've been in this job about 2 to 3 months, you're able to do the chair job. And I think especially it's very important that we look at different roles, we look at the portfolio change, or portfolio changing over is also when this happens too. And it's important too that you move your portfolios, because then you develop a commission that not only has expertise in a very small area, they get expertise in all the different portfolios. So I'm Commissioner Chrisman and I have talked many times about at some point in time telecom going that different way, perhaps pipeline siting and pipeline safety we switch at some point in time, but I think it's a very good process and it makes very good sense.
So basically it's kind of switching things up and kind of getting a broad array of everything.
I think so. That's what I would say would be the reason it was started, and I think it makes good sense.
Right. I guess it might have been much of a curiosity thing.
Yeah.
Just one clarification, yeah.
So, Commissioner Fedorchek, have you filed your FEC report if you were campaigning?
There was no campaign contributions received or
or no expended. Need
or expended. I just worked to use charm, Dave.
You didn't bring him cookies or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
But I will not be moving my office, just for the record.
Good, because I don't want to move
either. But I think also, too, we are changing the portfolios of business operations and the gas distribution. One of the things that I did start when I was chair was created the business ops portfolio, and that was one of the frustrations I had when I was not the chair, was we didn't have the chair perhaps didn't have the focus on the IT issues of the day, the budgeting issues of the day, the human resources issues of the day. So what the chair, I think, really focuses on, what I've done, I guess, is you've got your broad array of portfolios, but you need to have one commissioner really keeping a very close eye on all the dealing with the human resources issues, the money issues, the IT issues. You don't make any particular decisions, but then when it takes time to get a decision, you get your colleagues together. But that's one thing with a three-member commission. Some states actually have the chair has a little bit more authority in that area, and I think we've kind of found a nice mixture of that. And working with Steve and Josh and Daryl over the last couple of years, I think it's worked out very well. And that's one of the things I think that really allows everyone to get that perspective of the challenges and the importances of hiring people and doing those things. Mary Kate, you don't have any questions for us?
No,
how about Dwayne? You got any questions?
No,
right. Going once, going twice? All right, any closing comments, Commissioner Fedorchek?
No, for me.
All right, let's reconvene again about 20 of. I'm sure there'll be some questions. We got a lot of orders to sign. So let's close the meeting.
Okay, I've got to go to the bathroom.
Exactly, yeah.